Why, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It is 4 p.m. on a Thursday, and that means...
Everything under the sun.
I'm Raleigh Burley, joined by...
James Steinler.
And our guest today, John Bruna. Hey, John, how you doing?
Hey, doing good. Always a joy to be here.
And John, you are the founder and the spiritual director of the Way of Compassion Dharma Center, as well as the treasurer on the board you were just informing us.
That's right. People actually trust me with money these days. It's the benefit of being a more ethical person.
And it's also my understanding that you don't take any of it, the money that is.
No, that's right. It's a volunteer position.
That's so fantastic. How much of your time do you dedicate to the center?
You know, I've never really calculated the time. We do offer programs, teachings, multiple times a week. We do the bookkeeping and all that, as well as organize all the activities. The foundation actually offers many more things than just the Dharma Center, including the Way of Compassion bike shop, which I'm sure some of you have had the opportunity to participate with, and even the Compassion Festival that's here every year.
I'm always excited to tell people about the bike shop who are unaware that such a resource exists in this community. Place where you can go to basically have people work directly with you to fix your bike, and there's all these spare parts, and a place to donate a bike if you've got a clunker and don't really know what to do with it, and all kinds of workshops empowering youth and all kinds of people.
Yeah, that is all the brainchild of Aaron Taylor, a real precious treasure to our community.
And so what's going on with the Compassion Center? I heard a rumor that you might be reopening soon.
Yeah, I read that in the Soper Sun today.
That's where I saw it.
Pretty awesome. With COVID and everything, it's a lot of things shut down, and we're very fortunate to have had the opportunity to continue online with our activities, whether it's the Dharma teachings or different types of workshops. We offer a lot of resources, including even some workshops for people in recovery and so forth. And this next week, we're looking forward to a grand reopening. We have a new space in the 3rd Street Center, and we've got a team of volunteers that will show up Saturday to help decorate it. And we're going to be joined by the monks of Ganden Schartze Monastery. They'll be in town for 4 days. They'll create a sacred sand mandala that will take place for 4 days, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Anyone could come and to the big round room and watch that creation being made. And real wonderful way to, a very auspicious way to reopen our Dharma Center.
As far as you know, has there been a sand mandala created in that round room space of the 3rd Street Center?
Not in the round room. We were able to have one once some years back in the larger auditorium area. Mm-hmm. So we did do that 1 year.
Well, what a blessing. And it was very cool to read about these monks and the journey that they make to the United States to help keep the Tibetan culture alive and raise funds for the monastery in India. And you're very personally acquainted with them as well, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yeah, I've got the haircut to prove it. Yeah, so I was formerly a monk of Ganden Schartze Monastery. I was ordained back in 2005, and I was a monk for a little over 6 years, 2012. I transitioned out of monastic life.
So did that mean you were in India?
I have been at the main monastery in India four different times during that during my career as a monk. We had a Dharma Center in Long Beach, California. That's where my personal teacher was, an old Tibetan Lama. And so I spent a majority of my time there, as well as leading this very tour that will be here. I spent 3 years of my life traveling with the tour throughout the United States.
What's life like at the monastery itself? What's the day-to-day?
Oh,
man, it's
kickback.
Kickback.
Yeah. They only work 6 days a week. And by work, I mean it's about education. What a lot of people think of as a monastery is this quiet place where everybody's meditating. In the Tibetan lineages, and especially the Gelugpa, the big monasteries are actually universities. So these monks are highly educated. They start at a very young age. We have a school on site. The monastery in India, Ganden, has about 3,000 monks. So it's like a village. It's a, you know, a city within itself. And the little monks go to school during the day. The older monks, like 18 and on, are in part of the university. They're in school in the university about 15 years. They study 6 days a week, which includes hours of debate back and forth. You know, they know these texts incredibly well. We start our day at 5 a.m. Breakfast is 6 a.m. where you're doing your morning prayers. And usually around midnight, 12:30, that's when the monks start. You know, they're doing their recitations, memorizations, and often we'll go to sleep around 12:30, 1 a.m., wake up at 5 a.m. But there's a siesta time.
Around, that's good.
Yeah, noon, you know, we take lunch and then, you know, nap time till about 2 o'clock. So pretty active, 6 days a week, and a lot of prayers, a lot of chanting, a lot of debate. You can hear debate across the whole monastery in the late in the evening, even at 11 o'clock at night.
What kind of topics are being debated?
Well, the very foundations of Buddhism is really investigation. So Buddhism's not you know, based on some sense of, you know, belief, mystical belief. It's much more, you know, is this true? You know, ultimately, that's what the Buddha taught, is this true? So all of the courses of study are debated and picked apart, and is this true, and is that true, and what's the nature of your mind? Are you your mind? You know, you can start to really investigate a sense of self, a sense of how you experience the world. A lot of it now has made its way into modern Western psychology, cognitive behavioral therapy, and these types of techniques, which are now being utilized as common therapy about how we work with our mind and our thoughts and our body, you know, mind-body connection. Very common. It's been something that they've been doing for, you know, quite a while.
I have to ask, do the debates, do they ever get very heated, or are people generally pretty calm?
Oh, if you've never seen Tibetan debate, you got to Google it. Debate on stage. When I was with the tour, we would act it out. We would have a debate topic, and, you know, they're slapping hands and they're stomping feet, and, you know, this guy's hitting a question. He slaps his hand. Someone's seated there. You have to respond. There's a group of monks around. They're chiming in. They're pushing each other. They want to get the next question, and so it's very active, very physical, and there's nowhere to hide, right? If you're in class and people are shooting these at, and you got to have an answer, it's not, you know, my dog ate my homework. You're kind of on the spot. And so it's really fun to watch. And it's good-hearted. It gets heated in the sense of, you know, just energetic. Push, oh, what about this? And then, you know, what you're trying to do is get the other one to to really show up. They have like a ridiculous response. Like, you know, you follow a line of reasoning, and their reasoning just falls. And so often there's quite a bit of laughter. When you take your exams, you sit in front of the abbot of the monastery, and you sit in front, and then there's a monk standing over you and, you know, hitting the clap and debating you, and all the elder monks and the senior teachers are right there. So there's no pressure, generally, but you'll hear a lot of laughter come out of that, too. So, yeah, so it's a university 6 days a week, so there's prayers and meditation, as well as this very rigorous study. And then if you make it through all 15 years, you may get the degree, which would be called a Geshe degree. And we get one day off a week. It's Mondays at the monastery. So Monday's the day off. That's when people go to town. That's where we do our laundry. We wash our robes with our hands and all that. So I always kind of joke that on Mondays we decorate the monastery in maroon, because we're hanging, you know, maroon robes all over the monastery.
On Mondays, would monks wear their traditional garb, or just daily?
Yeah, they have extra sets. So the old version of it was you'd have one to wear, one to wash. Generally, these days you have a few more, and so you're washing those, and then you're just But you're a little more relaxed. It's a day off. It's a day to go to the village, get some groceries, maybe go to the town. The big city was Hubli, so we can go out and, you know, take care of business and relax a little bit.
Well, for folks just tuning in, this is Everything Under the Sun on KD&K, and today our guest is John Bruna, sharing about the reopening of the Compassion Dharma Center here at the Third Street Center in Carbondale, and you've been active online all through the pandemic, but the physical space is going to become available again, along with a meditation hall, and that's new?
Yeah, we're very excited because we now have a new space at the Third Street Center,
right.
And so it's right off the round room, a very inviting space, and once again, we'll be able to invite people in person. We really owe a great deal of gratitude to True Nature, actually, because it used to be their yoga studio before they built their beautiful new building. So, you know, they took great care in creating a very sacred space. And now, you know, the conditions have ripened for us to turn it into our meditation hall.
Great. And how did you get on this journey? What was your first connection with Tibetan Buddhism?
Really, yeah. How did a white kid from L.A. wind up being a Buddhist monk?
That was the question. Thanks for rephrasing it.
Yeah, how does that happen? And so, you know, long journey, we have a short time. But I was fortunate to, in my own life, you know, have some struggles. And, you know, I was someone who grew up in addiction and violence and, you know, guns being shot in my house and homelessness. And I was very fortunate that at the age of 22, I was able to change my life. I was able to find some recovery and start learning to ask a better question about life, which is, how can I be helpful instead of what can I do to feel good? And that really changed my life. So I got into the rooms of recovery. They taught me how to live and to ask that other question, which gave me years of recovery and opportunity to become a counselor and a school teacher. And ultimately, I traveled to Long Beach, California to teach high school right in North Long Beach, Compton, and home of Death Row Records and all that. And I thought, man, this is where I belong. But when I moved there, I met an old Tibetan Lama who had a center just a couple blocks from the house. And I went in there, and I'd been meditating. I'd been looking at Buddhism, and I just, you know, I just found that this incredible individual had what I wanted, you know, compassion, love, and kindness, you know. And they said he was good friends with the Dalai Lama and all that. And it's like, well, let me check that out. And then along the way, and I think this is a story that if I have a few minutes to share, is I decided to go to a teaching with a group of monks from the monastery on tour, just like this tour. My first experience, I'm just a guy, you know, and I go, and the head monk leading that teaching, he was talking about compassion. He was talking about great compassion, how you could have the thought in your mind with everything you do, may this be beneficial to all beings, you know, whether it's even going to the bathroom, may all the bacteria, you know, be the right kinds to help things. How can I feed someone? How can I attend to someone? How can I engage in this life in a way that's meaningful? And the way he shared it, like, you know, he meant it, you know. He's one of the few men up until my life that, you know, afterwards, like, he held my hand. And I was like, you know, I normally don't let guys hold my hand, you know. But it was like, ooh, that felt pretty good. You know, like, you can hold my hand. It's awkward, but it feels pretty good. And you know, it just hit. So this love. So I thought, you know, I want some of this. I went out to ask the monks, how do I do this? You know, so the tour, and they have a little store with them. Little round monk, little jolly guy, like your prototypical little jolly monk guy. Doesn't speak any English, but he knew how to sell me a mala for $10. So he knew how to take my money. But no English. And I went out in the parking lot, and there was a monk there, a Western monk. And I asked him, I said, you know, how do I do this? And he said, that teacher that you've been to is one of the greatest teachers in our whole tradition. You go there, you volunteer, you do whatever you can. Took his advice. I went and volunteered. And then I heard the Dalai Lama was coming to town. This one is Dalai Lama. I thought, when would I see the Dalai Lama? I got in this little lottery of tickets. I wound up in the fourth row. Pasadena, California, 2004. Fourth row, sitting behind the translator, having the Dalai Lama look at me for 3 days, brainwashing me. And I was like, you know, it was just mesmerizing. It was way over my head. I didn't understand a thing. But boy, you know, I thought about that. And so all the monks and nuns are on stage, and I went to one of the nuns that I knew, and I said, you know, I'm thinking about this monastic life. My daughter's, you know, graduating. She's engaged to get married. I'm, you know, thinking, I'm interested. And she said, well, you just go ask your teacher and, you know, beware. He doesn't, you know, generally give permission. So I made an appointment. I sat down. I said, yeah, I'm thinking about this monk thing, you know. I didn't quite put it that way. You know, I was very formal. I made my offerings. I sat there. And my mind was, I just wanted to know, did he think I had some qualities, you know, or am I just, you know, wasting my time? And he looked at me. He said, no, you're ready. And I'll take you to India next year. And I'm like, wait a minute. And he looked at me and he just told me about myself. Like, why I was right. Like, he couldn't know these things about me. He just went through my qualities and told me why I was ready. And then he pointed to one particular area I needed improvement. And I was, like, blown away. It's like he just saw through my mind. And so I'm like, okay, I'm in. So the next year I went to India. I got ordained. And in the monastery in India, you get assigned a teacher who's your caretaker in charge of, you know, your studies, your housing. He's like, it's kind of like a parent in a little family you belong to. Mm. Well, who do they assign? The monk who gave that talk those years ago, oh, earlier, becomes my teacher at the monastery. I'm like, whoa. I come home to Long Beach, and there's a little jolly monk who needs a place to live. The little guy who sold me the mala, he becomes my roommate for the next 3 years. And then the Western monk, he was the guy leading the tour, I wind up with his job. So they set me up. It's really what happened. Yeah. And to top it all off, when I get back, they asked me if I would be one of the coordinators to host His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama for a visit. 2 years from the day I was sitting in that fourth row, I'm now a monk. Greeting His Holiness the Dalai Lama as one of the coordinators hosting him in the very same venue. I mean, it was goosebumpy. And so I often tell people, and I think that's a quote in the paper, be careful when you go see a Dalai Lama. You might just get a haircut. Because who would have guessed 2 years later I would be a monk and get to meet him? It was mind-blowing.
Well, a warning to folks who are thinking of attending these activities for the reopening, you don't know where it's going to lead exactly.
It may end up with no hair.
That's right. And driving a bunch of monks around the country.
That's right.
And I was just pulling up the website where people can learn more about all of these events. Is wocdc.org. And there's several of them, including a tea ceremony, butter sculpting, a healing ritual, and an empowerment ceremony. Anything you want to unpack about some of those events?
Oh, yeah. One of the real opportunities of the monks here is the blessings that they bring. The sacred San Mandela is the centerpiece, and that's publicly open. You can come by 9 to 5, watch it come into creation. The opening ceremony, they'll do a ritual to purify and cleanse the environment and make it conducive to receive a mandala. This is a mandala of the Buddha of Compassion. At the end, on Monday night, when they do the dissolution ceremony, it gets consecrated, which essentially means all the prayers, all the intention, all the deities, all the bodhisattvas inhabit this sand mandala. And then they sweep it up. And, you know, people are just like, wow, it's very energized. You know, it's just palpable. And then the sand, a lot of people think you destroy a sand mandala. But in fact, what it's doing is taking new form. We hand out little bags of sand, so everyone who attends gets this little bag of sand with all the blessings imbued. And then the rest of it will take to the river, and then it goes into the river to spread all the blessings and prayers throughout the valley. So it's actually, they're prepared to promote peace and harmony and purification and healing throughout the whole valley. So the Third Street Center, Carbondale, and the valley, at least those people down valley, will get a lot more blessings. They're already up in Aspen, so I think they're getting some now.
There you go. And the mandala, does it typically have a design that they're going for, or does it come together
More organically.
More organically.
Yeah, no, they're, it's a very set, so they're creating the sort of cosmic realm of the Buddha of Compassion in this particular one. Okay. So we might have one of different types of mandalas, of different types of deities. Since we're the Way of Compassion and we're going to have an empowerment of the Buddha of Compassion, you know, the mandala of compassion. So it's very specific to the syllables and the sort of environment of the Buddha of Compassion.
Will it take all 5 days to create the mandala?
Yeah, we actually have four. I know we're here 5 days, okay. But just they'll be working on specifically four. And yeah, it'll take all four. And it's very meticulous, the little grains of sand that are just so specifically placed.
Mm-hmm. And people can come by at that time and visit, and there'll be things like malas for sale, singing bowls.
Yeah, the monks usually have a little bit of a store with them, so you can get a little round jolly monk who might be your roommate later sell you, you know, a song bowl or something. So, yeah, they generally, and it all goes to support the monastery, and that's kind of the big thing here is monastics live off of offerings, and so in Tibet, you know, the community supported the monasteries when the monasteries, you know, developed in India because of the Chinese invasion. You know, there's an India community, not a Tibetan community, so these tours took place to come out to, you know, promote the culture and to offer blessings and to do the work of a monastery, and then everything that gets donated, the funding for the mandala, the little gifts that you buy, or any donation for any of the events, it all goes back to help feed the monks and maintain the monastery. And these times with COVID, it's been pretty challenging. So there's a real added benefit to keep this culture alive.
Mm-hmm. Is there another way that people can make contributions other than buying goods?
Yeah, you know, on-site, you can always make an offering. If you go to our website, we have a donation button there. We're accepting both the donations that'll support the mandala and their lodging and all that, as well as we're accepting donations to help cultivate our new Dharma Center. So we need about $10,000 more to make sure we can pay the rent for the next year. So that'll help keep the Dharma Center alive. The other piece there is we've been really fortunate to be the only physical Buddhist center here in the Roaring Fork Valley, actually kind of on the bigger western slope. The only other Buddhist centers that I'm aware of that are physical spaces, there's Buddhist groups, but physical spaces, is Pagosa Springs, Durango, and one up, I think, in Steamboat. So very rare to have an actual physical space that is dedicated to the Buddha Dharma.
And so much emphasis is placed on compassion and a meditation around compassion. If you could describe what compassion means to you and why it's so important.
It's a great question because a lot of people have ideas about compassion that are different perspectives, certainly from Tibetan culture, from the way we approach it. People even talk about compassion fatigue, and we would say that's actually an oxymoron. It doesn't work. People talk about this idea of being burnout. There may be in a healthcare profession, or you know, first responders, or you know, hospice care. You can get compassion fatigue, get worn out, and that's actually empathy fatigue. Right, empathy is I feel your pain, right? I feel that, I connect with that. And empathy is incredibly important for us as human beings to have. And it is the touchstone to cultivate compassion, because compassion is about removing suffering. So I feel your suffering. Compassion's an energy. That's why you don't get burned out. Compassion's a motivation. It's an energy. It's a force. And now with neuroscience, we actually get to know that compassion's associated in the brain, in the reward center of the brain. Mm-hmm. And empathy is in a different part of the brain. And so with empathy, we can easily go to burnout. We can easily go to despair. I mean, you start reading the newspapers, you see the suffering. And if I don't kick into compassion, into skillful, what's healthy, how do I engage with this in a way that helps remove suffering, we can easily get caught up in despair. And so compassion from this perspective is this desire to remove suffering for myself and others. There's lots of compassionate things we do. And some things are very simple, like maybe you brush your teeth every day. That's a way of removing suffering of root canals and other issues. And so if we don't think of it as some mystical thing, we start thinking of it as an energy to engage in activities that remove suffering in yourself and others. And in that way, we can be more skillful in how we interact with our communities.
Well, we are just about out of time.
Yeah. Boy, that goes quick.
It goes sure quick. Does. I do want to just, for our listeners, share. You had told us a couple Tibetan terms, and my favorite one being yabadoo. Is that right?
Yeah, yabadoo.
Yabadoo.
That's good.
It's good.
So if you hear us saying yabadoo on the street, that means it's good.
Yeah, then you need to be very careful. Sup, sup. That sup means, be careful. And ke nanga male, no problems, no worries.
Ke nanga male.
Yeah. One last little fun thing with Tibetan, and we'll wrap it up. They didn't have a word for chair because they don't have chairs in Tibet. You sit on the ground. So the word for chair in Tibetan is kupkya, which translates as butt lift.
Kupkya.
Kupkya.
On that note, thank you so much, John Bruna, for joining us. And people can find more information on the website. What is that again?
WOCDC, Way of Compassion Dharma Center.org. WOCDC. And also, just give us a call. Monks will do personal healings and home blessings too if you're interested.
More information on page 3 of this Oprah Sun. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, John.